Get Craig out of here. I don't want to see him anymore.
You literally just told me to get Craig in here.
Well, I'm very indecisive.
There he is. And you call me an old man.
You yell at clouds.
The clouds are dumb. That's okay. We are joined by a guest today who, if I recall correctly, is much younger than we are to sort of bring that age gap down.
Yep. It's me, the Dungeon Lord Jay.
Welcome back. We shall refer to him as DL. That way we don't have two J's. You know, it's just
I'm fine.
Yep.
And well, Dungeon Lord's lost J1. And one of you could be J2.
No.
Or JA.
Yeah, determining who's who is just it's too much of a hassle. I'll go by the Dungeon Lord or DL.
Yeah, and I'm Christopher.
Oh yeah, that other guy.
Yeah.
This is a podcast where we talk about role-playing games primarily and complain a lot about Wizards of the Coast. That's on the backswing at the moment, thank goodness.
Primarily.
It could easily make a comeback very quickly.
You're telling me, man.
So I haven't talked to you since all of the OGL nonsense. I don't want to dive too deep into it. Please, for the love of God, we spent several podcasts on it. But
and that is actually, honest to God, that's my opinion on it, is that we have talked way too fucking much about it, and I'm done with it.
Perfect.
We won.
For
we
now.
We won, and they lost.
Yeah,
some
for now.
Say that we both won, but...
I watched it closely, I paid attention, but I didn't raise too much of a hubbub. The only thing that I really participated in is, you know, I told my friends when everybody was doing the unsubscribing to the D&D Beyond.
Yeah.
So, I don't even have a D&D Beyond subscription, so...
I don't either. I have an account because Waples made me get one, and I've never used it ever.
I get their free content they put out sometimes.
I was using it last night, and the account I have is still disabled, so I can't make any new encounters, and I can't creating new characters or anything like that, any of the cool tools that I normally use. So now that I've learned a lesson, I'll probably get it back. But I don't know. It definitely, not having the tool definitely kind of puts a lot of stress on my gaming style.
Sure.
Just because it's online and everybody's using D&D Beyond, and you know,
yeah, I get that.
So, yep. I'm glad things got sorted, so to speak, so I can get it back and not be looked down upon. Like, because like I said, I was struggling. I had to keep going in and edit old encounters that I didn't need anymore, so I could have like giant rat encounters ready for my players in case they disturb the giant rats.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's quicker and easier if you just have access to all that stuff.
You know, I've altogether given up on sort of trying to balance or make an encounter sort of make sense. I just throw whatever I think makes, like, I just look at the CR and say, okay, it's a quarter. I could throw like 10 of those at them. You know, just sort of throwing whatever I think would actually be in the dungeon or whatever, and just let them deal with it. Who cares? The 5e player characters are so freaking strong. They can do anything.
You're not wrong.
So I had like I had a player miss last night because they were sick. So I didn't tone down any of the encounters that I had planned for the group. And I knew it would be a little bit rougher for them because of that, because they didn't essentially have their healer. But they still were able to kill the two hardest encounters without going down at all, I think. Maybe one of them dropped down once. If they would have done all the extra encounters that were around, then they would have probably had some problems. They didn't even take a short rest. I kept trying to bring up the fact, like, hey, maybe you guys should take a short rest. You guys want a short rest? You should probably have a short rest. Maybe take a short rest. I'm sitting here like, oh my God, do not TPK because I will TPK the shit out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there super worried that my group's going to TPK. And they didn't. Surprisingly, they didn't. They actually pulled through all the encounters until I killed a couple of them later on.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us.
But that was kind of unrelated to the encounter strength. It was just, right. I had a So they're in. So the setup is they're in Waterdeep, and there's a cult that's coming in and kind of infiltrating the city. And the more they've been kind of being exposed to the cult, the more they've realized that the cult has infiltrated every level of the government. And most of the guilds are have been infiltrated by this cult. And who knows how many demons are actually out there. Well, they had a run-in with an NPC that was a receptionist for the Dung Sweepers Guild. Because one of the players wanted to get permission to go down into the sewers and find some of the cultists based down there and basically try to solve the problem real early. So he met a Harrigan receptionist named Judy Hopps, because I could not think of a better name.
Got him.
And that was kind of it. I really didn't expect him to go back to the Dung Sweepers Guild for anything because, you know, again, there's infiltration everywhere. You don't know who to trust and et cetera, et cetera. But one of the players went back this session to report a crime that was the taverns have basically been using, or certain taverns have been using the sewers to transport goods and services back and forth to each other. And they found a lair of cultists that had multiple access to multiple taverns. And he wanted to report that this was done to kind of like send the authorities that way to maybe like, you know, get a key in on that they're down there and help stop them. It was a good plan, except that Judy Hopps is a succubus and she charmed him and he was charmed.
Why would you report it to the Dung Keepers Guild or whatever it is and not just go to the, you know,
well, all the guilds are law enforcement. All the guilds are connected. So when the guilds can actually get, you know, word that someone's basically been vandalizing the sewers, they'll go to the authorities with the proper channels. If you go to the city watch, they're just going to say, okay, report to the
we'll make a form. Yeah, we'll write a form for you, you know.
And then he got the form and filled out the form. Of course, the form isn't going to go anywhere because he gave it back to Judy Hopps, who's a succubus. And the succubus charmed him and basically said, hey, you go do your day, but at the end of the day, come back to my house and tell me everything that you did. And he did. He didn't tell anybody about the succubus, about being charmed. He followed all the instructions that the succubus gave him. And he then got kissed by the succubus and took 45 psychic damage, I think it was.
Yeah.
What level are they?
4.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I have a lot of plans. Like, if the player wants to keep the PC dead, that's fine. I'll run with it. If he wants the PC to come back, I have a plan for that. That essentially, like, he won't be dead, but just in the cultist's hands, you know, and they'll have to break him out of there. I have a couple different ways, depending on what he wants to do with the character, you know. I don't like killing PCs in a long storyline campaign, like out of the blue, unless I like to give them options and let them figure out what they want to do. Does a character die or do they have to get rescued, etc.? And I find that it's more engaging as a storyline than just murdering the PC and being done with it and just like, nope, I'm done.
I can agree with that. I usually keep a devil on the back burner just in case they die. So be like, oh, you want to make a deal?
Yeah, you want a deal? Tell you nothing bad will happen. And there's things like that planned, essentially. Very close. Yeah. So we'll see what they actually decide to do.
Yeah, it's better not to kill off characters in storyline D&D games, if possible.
I'll kill them all off. Just watch me.
I said it's better not to. I didn't say don't do it.
is this the place where I go to complain about stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I be grumpy about something?
Sure. That's
literally what we exist for.
So I have been building for this incredible encounter in my Rime of the Frostmaiden game for real world months, right? There's these Duergar. They live in the mountain. They're Duergar leaders, like secretly worships Asmodeus, and he doesn't know it. And Asmodeus gives him this plan to build this construct dragon, right? That's supposed to get sent out and destroy all of the 10 towns. and my players go to the dungeon, defeat the Durgar Lord, but just as they're, you know, just as they defeated the Lord, the dragon escapes, right, and gets out. And now it starts fucking demolishing the 10 towns. And I sort of described, in as they were traveling, it takes them hours to get back from the mountain to the town. So over the course of several hours, maybe even a whole day, they had a long rest in between there. The dragon destroyed 7-8 of the 10 towns.
Mm-hmm.
And there's refugees flooding into the main town, Bryn Shandor. They're all flooding in from all these destroyed towns, and the player characters get some rest, and they're like, okay, the last town standing, basically. And they're like, all right, we're going to go out a couple hundred yards, a couple thousand feet away from the town and see if we could spot the dragon in the sky. And if we can, we're going to cast Earthbind on it. Are you guys familiar with this spell?
Is it even in 5e?
It is. It is.
Okay. In third edition, it was awesome. I don't know about in 5.
So they made this plan, right, to Earthbind the dragon. And we ended the session. So over the... We took a week off that week just so I could really focus down on how this encounter was going to go. And let me tell you guys how I planned it. I planned it. They go out into the... first of all, I'll tell you about this dragon real quick. It doesn't have... It's a CR-13 in the book. It doesn't have legendary actions. It doesn't have legendary resistances. I said, you know, the way I want to make this encounter, I want to make it dynamic and interesting. So I'm not going to give him legendary actions, but I'll give him those resistances. Just because when I have a monk who's got the, you know, where they paralyze them whatever that's called. And so that's debilitating. Stunning strike. Yeah, it's fucking debilitating. So I was like, okay, I got to save those for the stunning strike. So what my plan was I was going to have the dragon flying towards the town. They spot it. They earthbind it. I let them beat on it for a little bit. And then the dragon gets away. And then I have this whole dynamic fight where I divided the city on the map. I divided it into sections, 8 sections, and I would roll a D8 determining what section the dragon was going to attack at what time. And each round is going to represent 15 minutes. And in those 15 minutes, there's going to be encounters where Durgar are attacking or buildings are burning and they have to save people out of the buildings or whatever. I had a bunch of shit planned. Like I spent hours and hours and hours just sitting at this computer planning this session, right? And it was going to be awesome. Like they were going to beat it, but I didn't give it legendary actions because it was going to be like it's going to come down. The dragon's going to come down to strafe the town. And while it's down, they pelt it and then it gets away. And then they pelt it some more and they pelt it some more. So it was never going to be a sit down, stand up fight.
Yep.
Right. So come the day of the session, I was like, okay, I'm going to let this Earthbind go off. I even have it written in my notes. I'll let the Earthbind go off and, you know, they'll keep it for a round or two and then I'll skedaddle. So I get all the way up to the moment where they cast the spell on the dragon and they Earthbind it, right? They wrap this magical lasso bullshit around it and start pulling him down. And I was like, okay, this is exciting. All right, everybody roll initiative, you know, and we start getting everything ready. And it takes like 2 or 3 rounds for the dragon to get in range because it was like 300 feet in the air. So it gets enough rounds where it gets close enough and then it lands on the ground and they start beating it up. And I'm like, okay. Can one of y'all post Earthbind for me? Can you post it in the chat and I read it, right?
Yep. I already know where this goes.
It's a concentration spell, which I didn't know. And it lasts for a minute. Yep. The dragon has a speed of 0 for a minute. I didn't fucking know that. I thought it just drug him to the ground and then he could do his own thing.
Okay, but no, so hold on. You actually misconstrued it. Its flying speed is reduced to 0.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. It did have a walking speed.
Yes.
But this dragon is a chonky boy. He's a little slow. He's got like 30 feet of movement, but a fucking 90 feet flying speed.
Yeah.
But as soon as he landed on the ground, I was like, and I read that spell, I was like, oh no. And then they spent the next 7-8 rounds pummeling this dragon who didn't have any legendary actions. I got his breath weapon back once, and it only hit one player character. And the whole time, this dude that was concentrating on the spell, I only attacked him. And the entire time, he made every single constitution saving throw. Every single one. And they pummeled my awesome dragon that was supposed to be this awesome dynamic fight. They pummeled it. It wasn't even fun. By the end of the fight, when they finally killed the dragon, I was enraged. I was enraged.
Well, I mean, so the Shardalion dragon, okay, is... It's CR 11.
It's not 13.
No, I'm looking at stats right now. He's CR 11, but I mean, it's either here or there. I think he's actually more appropriately. He's probably like more of like a CR 8 or 9 because he only has 147 hit points.
No, I'm telling you, I just maxed out the hit points. I was in the middle of the fight and I was like, no, this is not going to work. So I maxed out the hit points and it still got stomped on.
Both times that I've run the Shardalion Dragon, I've had to double its hit points for the fight to be even somewhat entertaining for the players. Now, Earthbind on it, like your player casts Earthbind, I'm sure his saving throw was like maybe 14, 15.
Oh, it might have been 16.
Even 16. He has a plus 11 to strength saving throws and advantage on making those saving throws. So he could have just easily snapped out of it, like immediately at any time he wanted.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You don't get to save against it. Once you fail the save, that's it.
Yep.
Yeah. But I don't think you would have.
And see, what I imagine. Yeah, I know. I could have just burned a legendary resistance, but I didn't know the full extent of the spell until after I'd already let it land.
Yeah.
You know, because I was like, oh, it would be fun for them to make their plan work instead of saying, ah, fuck your plan. You know, because they spent this all this time being like, oh, we're going to meet it outside the town and we're going to cast Earthbind and we're going to do this whole thing. And I was like, OK, I got to let that work. Yeah. So I was like, I'll save my legendary resistances for the stunning strike.
So
they've stomped on him.
Yeah. So he's a construct, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But that doesn't make him immune to stunning strike. Yeah, fucking nothing is in 5th edition.
Nothing. Well, nothing. Many things I looked it up.
No, there's a couple things that are immune to stun.
Very, very few.
I don't think so.
Liches are immune to stun, and there's one of the animated armors that's immune to stun. There's very few things. Like, you can count them on one hand, things that are immune to stun. But yeah, I had a group fight the Shardalion Dragon in Sunblight. So there was nowhere that it could actually fly to because it was in Sunblight. And they just punked the crap out of it. It was just like, oh, let's just surround it and just beat the crap out of it. All right, we win. I'm like,
yeah,
all right. I mean, you're supposed to have this huge epic decision as the player characters from like when you get to Sunblight and you see the Shardalion Dragon take off. And like you have to make a choice. Like, are you going to go into Sunblight and stop the source of this machine, or are you going to like try to save 10 towns from the dragon? In both cases, by the way, when I've ran Frostmaiden, neither group has decided to chase after the dragon. They just see it and go, yeah, F that. I ain't fighting that. And they decide to go into Sunblight. But both times they fought the dragon, they just destroy everything. And he destroys everything on. I remember the math correctly. He destroys everything up to Carrig Koenig before the players would have a chance
can even get there. Yeah.
Get there. So like the earliest town that they can intercept him at is Tourmaline. And you can fight him there. And after like what, 20 hit points and damage, he flies to the next town, or 50 hit points, he flies to the next town and he repairs himself a little bit. But like by the time you get to Vryn Shandir, which is definitely the best place to have that epic big fight.
Right.
Or Targus would be another good place. So you handle that well, like cordoning off the cities and having Duergar attack and making it this big, huge thing. But yeah, Earthbind would have.
Yep. And I was real upset about it. And we went long. We went long. Like we were still playing D&D at like 11:30. And I was like, no, now you got to go back to the town and there's more Duergar there. And the town is burning because the Duergar set fire to the town. But by the time the next session came around, I was like, I was really upset and that was stupid. So we're just going to sort of hand wave it narratively.
So I had a bunch of players that went back to Vryn Shandir after They beat Sunblight out and they beat the dragon, and the Duergar have already infiltrated Bryn Shandir. So they're like, whatever, we can handle the Duergar as they show up. And one player decides to go chase after to see if he can't find his mom, because, you know, was his mom one of the people that died in the mass slaughter? And I actually had worked out the math. Like, there's X number of people within all of 10 towns, and a certain percentages get killed in each town. And then when you get to the city, another percentage is taken down. So I had a number value assigned to every single person that was there. And his mom was a certain number. And she unfortunately did die. So when he found, he got really mad. And then I was like, you know, let's see if the Duergar attack. And I rolled a random encounter, and a Duergar did attack him. So it was one player at level 5 or 6 versus 4 Duergar. And unfortunately, the Duergar won. He got slaughtered.
So the moral of the story is Earthbind needs a saving throw at every turn. Every turn that creature is Earthbinded, it needs to make a saving throw. Fuck that.
All right.
Well, at least give it the initial saving throw.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, though. It, like you said, it was making saving throws essentially every turn, because the player who cast it had to keep making concentration checks. That's the equivalent of a saving throw.
I guess you're right about that.
Yeah. Like, that's the only module from 5e I've ever actually run was Frostmaiden. And it was basically the same thing. My players didn't even bother with Earthbind. They fought it while it flew around. You know, most of the most of the party could just actually hit it from range. I think that fight lasted 5 rounds, maybe. Just from pelting it with damage from the ground, they were still able to kill this thing. And mind you, I specifically ran that entire campaign by the book. So whatever hit points that thing had, that's what it had. Whatever saves it had, that's what it had. I did not adjust anything, which is not how I normally do things. Because I wanted to see how balanced this shit is. How well, you know. And no, that dragon needs to be way tougher.
Definitely.
It needs to be just way more difficult of a fight. I even threw in, while they're fighting it, I had Duergar attacking around them. Mm-hmm. And they were handling that just fine. And, you know, they weren't over-leveled. They didn't have any more magic items than what they could have had at that point.
Right. Yeah, that's really cool that you actually, like, went through and did that. I'm actually trying that out right now with the Lost Mine of Phandelver. I just started a new group. We had our session zero yesterday, and we're going to play on Tuesdays. But I'm going to just run it, like, exactly as written and see how well it goes.
It's not bad, actually. It's pretty well balanced. That's actually one of the award. It won Game of the Year, and that was part of it because 5th edition was so good. But Phandelver by itself is really good.
All of my players have never even touched or listened to or seen anything that has anything to do with Dungeons and Dragons before. So it's going to be a challenge.
New players?
All new.
What have they played? Anything?
Nope.
Oh, wow. All right. That'll be interesting. Phandelver's probably a good starting point then.
I know. And minimal prep too, because I have a game, my Icewind Dale game, I put a shitload of work into. So, you know, it's minimal prep. I just pick up this little freaking pamphlet and run that.
Yeah, Phandelver's really good. I mean, they are rewriting the whole thing. Well, not rewriting the whole thing, but they are putting it as one larger campaign, and they're bringing in the essential stuff as well, too. But yeah, it's definitely a very good module. I think it's one of the best one they have. It's really nice, too, when you get players that are invested with some of the NPCs and whatnot that are there, and you really can kind of, like, really drive home a lot of the role-play aspects of it. That's actually kind of its downfall, too. When they get to the Phandelver itself, and they start actually, or Phandalin, and they start actually working with, like, the PCs and whatnot, it's very video gamey in a way. Like, you have to go out and, like, get all the side quests from all the NPCs, and then go out and do things, and you can do things completely in the wrong order and just get destroyed. if they go down to the halfling farmer and get her quest to go get the amulet
right.
from Thunder Tree. And then they go strolling up the Thunder Tree at level two. And then like, oh, a dragon. We must be able to beat this at level two because we're awesome. And then they die. And...
Yep. So we're going to see how it goes. These players. So you guys have played with new players before, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes new players, they don't quite understand what D&D is exactly. Yep. They believe it to be this sort of boundless Skyrim type world where they can just do whatever the hell they want and there's no consequences. So
can I interrupt real quick? This actually leads me into one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight. About
that is perfect.
New players. I will let you finish your story, and then I want to go through this thing that I've
It might touch on some of the topics, so go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to read a post that I pulled off of Dungeon Master Resources, and I'm reading it verbatim. This is my new favorite thing to do on this podcast, apparently.
Annoy me with shitty Dungeon Master Resources.
This is fucking golden. All right. At what point are expert rules as written players hacking the game mechanics and making the story unrealistic? We have a player in our party that knows the rules extremely well, but does things that seem unrealistic. Oh, now for you guys, everything I'm about to read out of here, ignore the thing about the rules bit. This is actually more about what the fucking player does.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So, in one example, we started off a game at low level and low starting gold. He chose to buy two house cats. In encounters, he would shake them up and use them as cheap missile weapons by flinging them at the foes, therefore effectively stunning them as they fought off the cat, wasting their turn. In game, it was effective, but it seemed like someone wouldn't actually do this to their pet, or that the cats wouldn't keep coming back every time afterwards. In a second incident, when confronted with a magically cold room, he gutted the freshly fallen character of another player and used their corpse as a meat jacket to navigate the room safely, getting tauntauned. Again, effective, but I felt like the actual characters wouldn't just be okay with this as a normal round action of a party member.
Jesus.
Finally, we had a situation where the party had lost a couple more characters, and there was discussion about carrying their bodies with us to see if they could be raised from the dead. The player said, anywhere we can get them access to resurrection, we'll also be able to perform regeneration. And then his character proceeded to cut off the legs, arms, and major outer torso muscle groups of the fallen characters and just drag their whittled torsos behind him in a sack. While this may be what their prayers do, it just didn't seem like a normal thing a character would do. His answer to this is always, rules as written, dog. Learn them. I feel like I'm not communicating well why this seems weird to me. Is he right?
Okay, no. I want to put in my input real quick before we get into this player's behavior.
Okay, have at it.
This dungeon master, where is the line where the dungeon master says, yes, that's the rule, but that doesn't make any goddamn sense, right? Like the meat jacket, for example. How did you let your player get that far? Like, why would you let he was just like, I would like to cut my friend open and take his skin off and wear it. At what point were you like, okay, let's see how this goes? You know what I mean? I can see the cat one because he's trying to make it, you know, that's kind of funny. We can do some things for a laugh.
Yeah.
But the DM is just letting this guy cut up his friends and stuff. You could be like, the dungeon master could say, no.
Yeah, like it's stupid. One of those things. It's like a fucking serial killer. It starts off small with pets and just.
and that's kind of like where my question would go too. Is like, are none of the other players gonna say anything to this man that's gutting their friend in front of them?
Like, mind you, the gutted friend. It did say freshly fallen, so the character was probably dead. But still. It's, you know, I don't think I know any character that you would play that is of good alignment is not going to be okay with that. Period.
Yeah.
Right. And so like
I think this is less about the rules and more about this is a problem player.
Oh God,
like,
yes.
This guy does not. This has nothing to do with the rules. Like you said, this is nothing to do with the rules. This player just wants to do really crazy stuff.
Yeah, well, and that's why I bring it up with the discussion of new players, because I've had new players do this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like this is a common theme. One of my other DMs, he said his son had just started playing D&D with his own friends, and within the first two game sessions, they had burned down an orphanage, killed a tavern full of villagers. Like this right. is, you know, this is what new players do.
Yeah, I mean, like I get that. I get that's what new players do, and to some extent, like people do crazy things. Like I had a person that was a first time player, and they decided like, oh, I'm going to steal from the NPCs because I'm a rogue, and that's what rogues do, right?
Yeah, and exactly.
I'm just like, no, they don't have to. I mean, you can be and play it however you want. You know, you don't have to be just outwardly evil and malicious like that. You know, that's kind of rough. Yeah. But she's like, no, I think it's great. It's exactly what I want to do. It's like, okay, well, feel free. There will be consequences. And that's, I think, where the problem with this DM kind of comes in. He's not giving the players consequences.
Consequences. Yeah. That I completely agree.
Yeah, I think, and truthfully, I think the DM is probably fairly new as well. Because when you are a new DM and players try to get away with stuff, you just don't know how to handle it. You don't know better.
Right.
An experienced DM will try to maneuver their players in the right direction. And sometimes you have to take a hard stance of, no, we're not doing that. Other times you can just have consequences. You know, I mean, dragging corpse, you know, parts of your friends into town expecting resurrection, you're going to get some feedback on that from, you know, members of the clergy, as it were.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much
in my session zero that I ran last night with these new players. I kept them as long as I needed them. So I went over basic lines of veil, stuff like that, and campaign overview, tone, shit like that. And then I made characters with them together. So the melee characters, they were done in no time. Yeah. But the spellcasters, I had two spellcasters, and I left the spells for last. So I was like, okay, get everybody else out of here, and let's just hang out with these two spellcasters. And the two players that played the spellcaster seemed to be the ones that were the most intrigued, I'll say, by D&D. However, they both kept asking me very disturbing questions about the game, like what you can do in the game. For example, one of my players, he's a warlock, he was saying, can I cast Charm Person on someone and tell them that a stick of hay, right, a piece of hay, is now worth more than gold, and that should be the currency of the town, and overthrow all the money in the of this town and the government itself? And I was like,
he's expecting a lot from the charm spell.
Not just the charm spell, but I explained, hey, this is the main idea for the campaign. You guys go to this podunk town, and the game expects you to sort of want to be heroes and save it, and then eventually find a mine and sort of bring prosperity to the town, right? That's what the game expects. And this guy was talking about overthrowing the government and like trying to, he was like asking me all these strange questions about how systems of money and stuff work when you're not in a major city and stuff like that. And I was like, hey, bud, there's a campaign out there for you. This isn't it.
Yeah, like the Phandelver is very generic. It's very straightforward.
I want to interject real quick.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we did when we played Phandelver. We worked with the local government and instilled ourselves as leaders of the town.
I stand corrected.
Just FYI. We sent the bard and another player out to basically convince the town folk to rise up against the red bandits, whatever they were.
Red brands.
The red bands. Burned down the Sleeping Giant Inn. And while they did that, we went in there and I assassinated the mayor. Jesus. And if you know who the, well, not the mayor,
you're an experienced player, bro. Come on, man.
Well, I didn't like him. I didn't like him. Something was fishy about him. And it turned out he was a doppelganger or something, if I remember right.
Oh, okay.
So I was spot on. The best part, too, is like I had him, I basically tossed a gem on the table. And I was like, hey, pick that up. And I was like, yeah, look into it. It's like, I want you to know that that's the only thing you're going to have for the rest of your life, because you need to get out of here right now. And I tried to persuade him to leave because of that. And I failed. And I was like, go ahead and take a good long hook at the gem. He's like, okay, well, he takes it up and puts it up to his eyes. Like, all right, I cast Chromatic Orb through the diamonds because I need that as the component. And I cast Chromatic Orb right into his face. And that started a combat. I didn't know he was like a demon or whatever in disguise, by the way. So, but yeah, then we had to punk him so we could take over the rest of the town.
Thought you were killing a 6-hit-point villager.
Yeah, I kind of honestly thought I was. Nope.
My other player, he's a druid, and he was asking me about, he was like, I don't know what was going on in his head, honestly. I wish I could. But he was asking me, he was like, the first question he asked is, hey, if I cast a cantrip, can I cast another cantrip to like amplify that cantrip? And I was like, no, maybe, I don't know. So his example was, he wants to cast, he wanted to be able to, that he ran the whole thing down for me. He said, I want to be able to cast create bonfire, and then I want to cast control flames to make the bonfire bigger. Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, yeah, that sounds reasonable. And he was like, okay, and if I wanted to cast fog cloud first, does that obscure me so that no one could see me? And I was like, yeah, pretty much. So he was like, so in theory, I could cast fog cloud, create a bonfire, and then spread that, and no one will know that I burned down this building. Nah. And I was like, wait, what? when? Why are we burning down buildings, dude?
That was a
different player than the other player. They're trying to overthrow the government and burn the town.
They got their priorities right. They know what they're all about.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, because honestly, you can kind of just take it and do whatever you really want with it, and it kind of lets the players feel their way out. And I do get a lot of players that are new, like, what's the extent of things that I can do in D&D? Like, can I, you know, can I seduce the barmaid kind of thing? Because they don't know.
Right.
You know, can I steal from the shopkeep? And I always tell them, it's like, yeah, you can do whatever you tell me you want to do. Just be aware that there will be a counter role, in a sense, to your actions. And if your actions are not good or not neutral or even evil, then there will be consequences if you get caught. And a lot of people are I'm still going to stab the guy.
Yep. Yeah. And like Jay said, you have to be able to draw a line somewhere. Like, this is your game, and you're facilitating this whole situation. It's one thing to be like, huh, this outcome could be very interesting. And there's another thing where the players are completely ruining your fun, you know? Yeah. And that's a different thing entirely. You can say, no, what you're doing is stupid, and I will not allow it in my game. If you want to rethink that, that would be great.
I tend to always be very, I don't care what you do, because I will have fun either way. And I let players kind of go off and do whatever crazy, dumb things that they want to do. And if it kills them, it's on them. That's not on me. And I don't feel bad for it. That was their decision. They made the decision. They made the call. You know, I've established with them, usually in session zero, that there will be consequences if they do things the wrong way.
Sure, but that's it's possible that the actions of one player can ruin the fun of the entire table.
Yes.
Yeah, and I usually in my home campaigns, I try to establish right out of the gate that everyone is friends with each other. You're not out to get each other. But if a mistake happens and one player does something that ruins the rest of the group's reputation or what have you, then that's something that they have to resolve. They have to find a solution to that. And that has opened up a lot of really good role play in the past.
But you said this is your home game, though.
Right. In Adventures League.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If I'm playing with my friends, like my rhyme group, and they want to do something wild, they know, and I know, and we all know. We will have a good time no matter what. Right? If they try to pull some fuck shit, we will make do with that. Right? But these are new players that don't have any experience with the game. And also out in the world, like that guy that wants to chop up his friend's body and stuff, there are players out there that are problem players.
Yeah. In Adventures League, because that is the one where I have the most access to the populace of people that are around there, I establish like you have to play by the Adventures League rules. That's the basis that we're going to go with. And part of that is no evil characters, no PvP. And there have been a couple times where people have done stuff and all the players are like, I want to cast whole person on him before he does that thing stupid. And I'll let it slide because it's not murder. It's not murdering the person. It's just stopping them. And I usually have to get very tiptoeing, kind of negotiate those situations a little bit better. But like I said, in the public setting, you know, I don't let anyone kind of do evil things at all. I haven't run any games where it's really been an issue, like that wasn't a home game or Adventures League. But I have told people and kind of like gave them the whole like, are you sure you want to do this dad look to them? And they usually decide not to do it.
Normally, yeah. Most of the time, if you give them that look and give them the, are you sure that's what you want to do? A lot of times they'll backtrack on that.
And if they don't, they die.
Yeah, people like to make jokes in the game, you know, because it's funny to picture characters doing certain things that it would be funny.
Well, yeah. I've had players that would do that, and they would continuously do it. Like every game session, they would do the pretending, I'm going to do this thing, and they would do that 4 or 5 times throughout the course of the night. And then backtrack immediately afterwards. So finally, I held a player to that. When they said they did it, I made their player go through with it. And after that, they stopped doing it.
It stopped happening. Yep.
Yeah, because there were absolutely quick fallout consequences for their action at the time.
No, I don't want to die. Well,
maybe you shouldn't have done it. If you say you're doing it, I'm going to start holding you to it.
Yeah. So in the case of the story that you this total sort of told from the what is it DM resources or something?
Yeah. Yep.
I think that first of all, as the DM, right? It's your job to talk to the players. I think that's one of the most important sort of things about a dungeon master is I have more conversations with my players outside of the game than we have in the game when we're online, you know, because I want to talk to them about, hey, how are you feeling about this game? Is there anything you wish you could see more of? Do you feel like your backstory is being incorporated? Stuff like that. Making sure everybody's having fun. Cause really that's your job as the DM is to make sure everybody's having fun. So what somebody needs to do, probably the DM, he needs to grow a pair and sit down with this player and be like, hey, the things that you were doing in the game are sort of backhanding my role as the dungeon master. If you want to run a game, I would gladly play because the DM always wants to play. But otherwise, let's talk it out and sort of work out what you expect out of the game and what I expect out of you as a player. And if that happens, I'm sure that this sort of situation will simmer down a little bit. I mean, the cat thing's kind of funny. We can live with the cat thing. That's kind of funny.
It's funny, and I've allowed my players to kind of get away with stuff like that. We have a regular trick in all of our D&D games we like to call the weasel test. And it's essentially you buy a bag of, I can't even remember the name of it. There's a bag where you can pull out weasels and other small animals that just magically creates them. And then my players will use that to test for traps. Yeah, you take the weasel, you chuck it down the hallway, see what sticks. Yeah. Oh, flame trap. Poor weasel. Oh, well. Just pull out another one.
Poor weasels.
Yeah, but they're not real. They're just, you know, summoned out of a magical bag. It's a whole other thing to take actual cats, shake them up, and hope that they actually distract an enemy that's trying to kill you. And mind you, there are no rules for anything like this in 5th edition.
Right. So it's up to the DM to sort of adjudicate that sort of thing. Yeah. I would allow it to be. I wouldn't make them stunned. That's way too strong. I would say that it's like the help action or something. The next person could get advantage or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. But
some people though just want to watch the game burn.
Yeah.
It's true. As a DM, I had never really done session zeros. I'm kind of starting to do them. And I think for new DMs, it's a really, really useful tool, especially if you're playing like just out with random people or people who have never played. Having a session zero is a really good thing to do. As the DM, it is your job to facilitate things and to craft better players.
Like, yes,
if your players are bad, whether they're bad at the rules or just bad at role play, bad at like the story I told, it's your job.
Problem players.
Yeah, it's your job to try to make the better. Some players you never will. Some players you just need to get rid of. But you're the DM. Try to make it happen.
And it also goes back to, that also touches on talking to your players. There's no way in hell that these other players sitting at the table other than this guy in that story are just having a gay old time with this. Somebody's got to have an issue with this. And the DM needs to talk to everybody and be like, hey, is this making you uncomfortable? Is this fun for you? And if some people are like, hell yeah. And some people are like, no, this is horrible. You need to change it. You need to fix that.
Yep. I personally would be laughing my ass off. at every instance of this, I think it's fucking hilarious. But I do some players in my group that would not think it's funny.
So you're saying we have to talk to our players outside the game?
Oh yeah,
I've never done that. I see them at the game, and then I see them when the next game happens. I have no conversation to them. Even my wife, I don't talk to her.
He's even married to one of them.
We have the game. We look at each other. We nod at the end, and just that's it. And then we're done.
High five afterwards. See you next week.
No, but I do need to talk to my players more because I hardly ever do that. I actually ask, because I'm more concerned that the stream is going well. And my thought is that if people watching my stream and the D&D game for the stream are enjoying it, then the players must also be enjoying it.
It is a different sort of situation in that case because there's an audience in that sort of situation.
Yeah.
But in my games, the players are the audience.
Yeah, I would say, honestly, even streaming it, focus on your players first. They are more important than the viewer simply because they're the ones there. They're the ones that are actively participating in the thing. You need to make sure they're having fun. If they're having a good time, then I think the rest of it kind of falls into place.
Absolutely.
I don't care about them.
You just care about the views. That's all
I just want
matters.
The views. I need more subs. Macho Man, don't care about your...
Yep.
You guys want to play a game?
I was just about to ask about that. All right, so how does this work?
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, well, for the first thing that I want you guys to do. So this game is called... Make a saving throw? ? But the first thing that you do you guys have any dice just lying around? D20s?
I always have dice lying around. I got a brand new D20 that was given to me by my wife. It's pink and gold and has a couple little hearts for the D20.
Perfect. All right, I want you guys to roll off to see who goes first.
Oh, okay. What are we rolling? D20?
D20, please.
All right. I got a 15 is what I rolled.
I got an 11.
All right. So, Jay, you get to go first.
Okay.
And I'll tell you guys the rules of the game or sort of the general idea of the game, and then we'll get into the rules. So the general idea of the game is this is sort of a trivia thing about saving throws. Okay. So just keep that in mind. The whole thing is based on saving throws. Okay. So... I am going to ask you a sort of question. I'm going to ask you, what is the saving throw for blank? You answer it, Jay, you're first. So you answer it and you get a point if you get it right. If you don't get it right, I pass it to Chris. If he gets it right, he gets the point, right? Okay. And then there's bonus points. So whoever gets the question right, they get to answer the bonus points to possibly get bonus points. And honestly, I might switch the bonus points to the next player too. You know, so either you have two chances per question to get a point.
All right.
Cool. All right. So, Jay, I'm going to start off real simple, real easy. That's why we rolled off, because the first one's super easy, but it's to get to the idea. What kind of saving throw do you do, like, does the enemy do for a fireball spell?
That would be a dexterity saving throw.
That is correct.
Yeah!
So you get a point. Your bright streak flashes from your pointing finger to a point you choose within range, and then blossoms with a low roar into an explosion of flame. Each creature needing a 20-foot sphere needs to make a dexterity saving throw. Now, for bonus points, how much damage does it do?
8d6.
You got it! There's 2 points for you. 8d6 fire damage on a failed save, or half as much on a successful one.
Damn, I'm good at this game.
I'm picturing you're going to get all the easy questions, and I'm going to get all like the super hard.
No,
like,
this one's kind of easy too. I knew I wanted the first two to be a little bit.
In Ari Stebbins' fourth book, he talks about an experimental level 12 spell that can destroy the world. What's a saving throw for?
No, but they do get a little tricky. Okay, so Christopher, you're up next. What kind of save do you make if you to not lose concentration on a spell?
Constitution.
Yep. Constitution saving throw. Some spells require you to maintain concentration in order to keep the magic active. If you lose concentration, such spell ends. To be maintained, you need to make a Constitution saving throw. The DC equals 10, or half the damage you take, whichever is higher. If you take damage from multiple sources, you got to make multiple saves. Now, for the bonus point. What is another way to lose concentration?
By casting another concentration spell?
That is correct. By casting another concentration spell.
Or ending it as a free action?
Well, that one doesn't really count because that's ending it. That's dropping the spell, not losing concentration. But okay. Another way is going incapacitated, right? So getting knocked unconscious or stunned or something. Yep. All right. So we go back up to Jay. Jay.
All right.
What kind of save do you make for the Mind Flayer's Mind Blast ability?
That is probably an intelligence save.
You are correct!
Yeah!
The Mind Flayer magically emits psychic energy in a 60-foot cone. Each creature in that area must make DC 15 intelligence saving throw or take 4d8 plus 4 psychic damage. However, for bonus points, what condition does it give you on a failed save?
Stun is not a condition, is it? Shit, what are they called? I don't think that's right, but I'm going to say incapacitated.
You're only half correct. I'm not going to give you the point. You were wrong. Stunned is a condition.
Yeah, it's a condition. Okay.
Yes. So stunned was almost had it, but unfortunately.
No, I didn't get it. I was thinking that stunned was... Obviously, stunning fist stuns you, but I thought there was actual other condition.
Yeah, so stunned actually gives you the incapacitated condition as well as other things. Yeah, so I
wasn't necessarily wrong.
I'll give you a half point if it boils down to it.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna win by a half. Point.
Okay, Christopher, this one's a tricky one. A ghost using its possession ability. What kind of saving throw is it?
Charisma.
You are correct. It is a charisma saving throw. Man, I thought I picked hard ones. They need a humanoid the ghost can see within 5 feet must succeed on a DC 13 charisma saving throw or become possessed. There's a whole shitload of things that it says about that. However, for the lots of text. For the bonus point, what are the three ways that the possession can end?
I have to name all three.
Yes.
Ooh. I guess when the ghost possesses somebody else. I think something can force a save to happen. It might be damage on the actual person that is possessed. I don't want to know if a third one though. I don't know. Those are my two guesses of the three.
So if you don't have three, you forfeit the bonus point.
What? He gets half credit? I can't get two-thirds credit?
I'm gonna pass it to him, and if he doesn't get it, nobody gets it.
Oh, I could have answered the other one.
Yeah, you could have. Right. That's true. I didn't give it to you. So the half point's garbage. Sorry about that.
So, no half
point. I forgot about that.
So I'm gonna say when the possessee takes damage, he can make another save. When the ghost basically possesses somebody else, and when the opponent dies that's being possessed, they're no longer possessed when they're dead. I think those may be the only conditions.
You didn't quite get it, but you were kind of right. So no bonus point. No Jay, bonus. Do you want to try to answer it?
I'll try. He gave me, I think, a couple of them that are probably correct. When it possesses somebody else, when the person that is possessed becomes incapacitated, and the third one is probably protection from evil spell.
No close. All right, no points, no bonus points. There are three different ways for the possession to end. One, the body drops to zero hit points. So it's not necessarily going down or incapacitated. It's just dropping to zero hit points is when the possession ends. Another way is if it, I'll kind of count it for the, you know, like it possesses somebody else. The ghost can choose to end it at any time. That also is another way. But if you don't even want to count that, there is turn undead that a cleric can do.
Any effect that if the ghost is turned or forced out by an effect like dispel good and evil.
Like dispel evil and good. Yeah. So not the whatever one that you said.
Not dispel protection. Evil and good. It's dispel. Okay.
Protection. Yeah. It's dispel. Right. Because it's even in the description of
I knew dispel there was evil and good. I knew for certain there was a spell that described that. I just couldn't remember it.
So actually, there's four things listed here. It's body drop to zero.
Yes. If we don't count the ending it one, because I don't really want to count that because I didn't count that for something earlier where you could just choose to end the concentration.
Either of us got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. It was a tricky one. Okay. Who's supposed to answer this one now? Jay, you're up for next, right?
Yep.
Okay. Jay, the vampire's charm ability.
Yeah.
What kind of save is it?
I think it's a wisdom save. See the let's go with wisdom since I already said it.
Wisdom save is correct.
All right, awesome.
Yes. Now this is the bonus points one's good. So the vampire targets one humanoid within 30 feet. DC 17 wisdom save. They're charmed. Yeah, they aren't under their control. It lasts for 24 hours. Perfect. Yep. All right, for the bonus point. All four of the, and this is in quotation mark, all four of the vampire weaknesses noted in the stat block. That's for the bonus point.
All right. Well, let's throw out some of the tropes. Holy water, sunlight, silver. The fuck would be a fourth one?
There is a section in the vampire stat block that is called vampire weaknesses, and there are four things listed there.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not gonna. Let's see. Sunlight, silver, holy water. I don't know. Let's fucking go with garlic because I don't know.
All right, Chris, for the bonus point. Sorry, Jay. Christopher, for the bonus point. What do you got?
So the wooden stake in the heart kills him. I know that's mentioned someplace. I don't know if it's considered a weakness or not. But silver, daylight, holy water.
Okay. No bonus points.
I'm not right. No.
But you guys touched on a couple of things. So first of all, if you guys think about stat block, whenever something that is takes regular damage from silvered weapons, it's notated under resistances.
Yeah.
So that does not count as one of the weaknesses. But I'm sure that that's correct. But it doesn't. There are four things specifically listed on the stat block.
Look, I didn't know what they were, so
yeah, it's fine. It's fine. It's not like I could have done it any better. I just have the list here in front of me.
Exactly.
So the first one notated is called Forbiddance. The vampire can't enter a residence without an invitation from one of the occupants. The second one is Harmed by Running Water. The vampire takes 20 acid damage if it ends its turn in running water. Christopher sort of got this one right. Stake through the heart. But it doesn't kill the vampire. It only paralyzes them until the stake is removed, and they have to be inside of their resting place and incapacitated. So that's a real specific one. And the last one you both got right. It's sunlight hypersensitivity. In sunlight, it takes 20 radiant damage when it ends its turn.
Yeah, because you really don't think of forbiddance as a weakness.
No.
It's more of like a specific vampire condition.
Staff lock.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. I'm the messenger here.
What can vampires do?
Anybody who's ever seen the Lost Boy movie knows about forbiddance.
I have to say, unfortunately, I've seen way too much Vampire Diaries, and that's also a rule in that show.
Oh, okay. Well, I've never seen that one. But if you haven't seen Lost Boys, then let's stop this podcast so you can go watch it. So.
I have that. Isn't that who was in that?
Kiefer Sutherland.
Yes.
Came out in the '80s. Had
Yes. I've seen it once before. I can't say that I could quote it, but I have seen it before.
I just remember, I think it was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. One of the main characters dies because he's like in the school by himself, and some vampire guy that they're fighting, some big bad, shows up into the school. And it's like, well, how did you get into the school without someone inviting you? And he says, well, what's the motto that's written on the front of the school? And it's like, you know, enter in all those who seek knowledge. And he's like, all right, so how do you make mac and cheese? Some like really dumb piece of knowledge. And he's like, shit. And then he gets killed. And then, what is it? The DBC Abridged, when I did Helsing Abridged. And the paladin is basically killing Alucard. He's basically like, yeah, I killed him. I shot him right in the effing head. He's like, that's cool. What about steps 2 through 7? Yeah, you got to stake him in the heart as well, too. And you got to burn him. And you got to hit him with holy water. I always like vampires that have a lot of conditions that they have to.
Yeah, I kind of dig that about vampires, too.
Yeah.
All right. Who is next? Are we on Christopher again?
Me. Yeah.
All right. What is the saving throw for the Beholder's Petrification Ray?
Constitution.
That is incorrect.
Really?
Yes. Wow. I'll give it to Jay. Jay, the Beholder's Petrification Ray.
I would have said the same thing.
I know, me too.
I'm going to go with Strength Saving Throw.
That is also incorrect.
All right. Yeah, I don't know.
The answer is a Dexterity Saving Throw. Isn't that crazy?
I could see it with all of it. It would be one thing if it's a spell, but I guess with Raise, it's probably always a dexterity save.
Well, some of them are different. Some of them are like wisdom saves and stuff. I know, dude. Everything for a petrification, like Medusa's petrification is con. Basilisk's is con. But for some reason, the Beholder's is dexterity.
That's a wild one. Holy
I
shit.
I know. Okay, so it's still Chris's turn, Christopher's turn. So for the bonus point, can you, Christopher, name 6 of the 10 Beholder eye rays?
Probably not the specific names, but they have the disintegration ray. Mm-hmm. They have their necrotic eye beam. They have the petrification one. They have a fear one. They have the... crap. Force, petrification... Fear.
Hold up, you're starting to name a bunch of random stuff. When you get it, give me all 6 of them.
So you got the disintegration one, and then you have the necrotic eye one, you have the petrification one, you have a frost eye one, I believe. There's a fear one, there's a charming one. I'm trying to envision the stat block in front of me. I can't. Uh, Damn. All right. That's all I can think of. There's still a six. I don't know how right I am with those.
You are incorrect. I'll pass it to Jay.
Okay. Let's see if I can do any better. There's a fear. There's paralysis. There's petrification.
Paralysis. That's what I forgot.
There's disintegration. Force. Fuck. Already forgotten some of the ones you said. Necrotic. I think that's six.
That's six. All of those are correct. You didn't name them exactly right, but I knew what you meant. The necrotic one you guys kept calling or kept saying is called the innervation ray.
Yeah, yeah. Feels necrotic.
I accept it. And the force one is the telekinetic ray, which I accepted the force thing. But yeah, so frost ray wasn't correct, unfortunately. You would think, but it's incorect.
There's one that does cold damage, though, right?
What are the other? Well, remember, Chris, you've run the Frost Beholder multiple times.
Yeah, but there's still a Frost.
No. The Gazer has a Frost Ray. There's a Charm Ray, Paralyzing Ray, Fear Ray, Slow Ray, Innervation Ray, Telekinetic Ray, Sleep Ray, Petrification Ray, Disintegration Ray, and my favorite, the Death Ray.
Oh, that's right. Death Ray is separate from disintegration. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, from the innervation, it does more damage. And if you fail, you die.
Hey, so Chris, there's a version of sleep that doesn't suck.
But yeah, I actually messed up too because I thought the Death Ray was the disintegration ray and dealt force damage, so I had mixed those two up. Yeah,
easy to do.
Yeah, I see. Because I knew there was a necrotic one. There's actually two necrotic ones. Innervation one and
the Death Ray.
Death Ray. Yeah.
Right.
But I thought it was
they're separate,
I thought
right?
The Death Ray was force.
Right. Right. Okay. So we're back to Jay. I only have two more. And this one's I think my most hardest one. When I saw this, I was like, there's a rule for this. So for Jay, because you got the easy one in the beginning. Falling off your mount. What's the saving throw for falling off your mount?
Do not fall off the mount?
Correct.
Man, that's a tough one. I'm gonna have to go with dexterity.
You are correct.
Okay.
It is a dexterity. I would think strength in my mind, but it is a dexterity. Now let me read this specific rule to you because it's pretty interesting. If an effect moves your mount against its will while you're on it, you must succeed on a DC 10 dexterity saving throw or fall off the mount, landing prone in a space within 5 feet of it.
Makes sense. Yeah.
If you are knocked prone while mounted, you have to make the same save.
Yeah. In third edition, it was absolutely a dexterity save. I wasn't sure about fifth, but I made the assumption it would be the same.
And you are correct. Now for the bonus point, if your mount is knocked prone and you like succeed on the save. Oh no, if your mount is knocked prone, most of these are for landing prone and staying on your mount, right? You want to stay on your mount.
Yeah.
But if your mount is knocked prone, what can you do as a character to keep yourself from falling prone as well?
Make an acrobatics check.
This one's wild. I can't give you the bonus point.
That's fine.
Christopher, can you give me the answer that I'm looking for? It's real stupid specific. If your mount is knocked prone, what can you do to keep yourself as a player? What can you do to keep yourself from falling prone as well?
Probably a strength save of some kind.
Oh, incorrect. Nobody gets the bonus point. This is weird and weird ass rule that I never heard of in my life. You can use your reaction to dismount as it falls to land on your feet. That's all you
Help
have to do.
Help me, boss! Just, no, fuck you.
All you have to do is just use a reaction to say, I dismount while your thing is falling prone and you land on your feet.
Wow.
No save or nothing. Isn't that wild?
I never would have known that one.
Me neither. Oh, yeah. Yep. All right. There's the falling off your mount rules. Yeah. No, it never really comes
understand,
up.
I can understand the logic from it. It's like leaping from like the elevator that's falling. Like, oh, if I jump up right before it hits the ground, I'm not going to die, which is bullshit.
Yeah, I don't, I love how it just says, use your reaction to dismount as it falls and land on your feet. I was like, what?
No, that's... that's I'm developing my own game system. Official rules. That's bullshit.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, for the last question... Well, this is like the... There's one... There's a last. There's another question called All the Dice. But, all right, so, Chris, real quick. What is the saving throw for Power Word Kill? Christopher.
There is none.
That is correct. That it was a correct. Trick question. It was a trick question.
Why do I get a trick question? I told you. I was going to get the trick question.
It was easy. It was easy, and you knew it. He got the fireball. You got the power word kill. Right. Now, for a bonus point.
I doubted myself for a second because I was like, well, I thought I didn't have one.
It doesn't. All right. So for the bonus point, what level spell is it?
It's 9, right?
Yep. It's 9. Yeah. You got it. You utter a word of power that can compel one creature you can see within range to die instantly. If the creature you choose has 100 pitch points or fewer, it dies. The end.
Yep, I killed one of my players with it.
All right. And you guys keep track of your, did you guys keep track of your points? Because I didn't.
Yeah, no. I got 7. Jay got 6.
I got 7.
Okay, so you're both. I think
Jay
amount of
won
points.
Technically.
No, I think we tied.
Hold up. There's a bonus round.
Oh. Okay, fine. One for all the and dice.
This, yeah.
Yeah, this one's called All the Dice, right? So I'm going to read you a little thing, and I want you when we're going to play a little game, okay? As of 2019, which is the date of the blog post where I gathered this data, list the stats in order to most common saving throw to least common saving throw in 5e spells. Does that make sense? So Start with the first one and end with the last one. And what you guys can do is, why don't you put your answers in a chat somewhere, you know, on the Discord?
No.
Just write them down somewhere and just read them off.
Write them down somewhere. Yeah, and just read them off. That's fine too. Yeah, just write them down so that you have your answers locked in.
Most common to least
to common. Least common in spells.
Yeah.
And that's as of 2019. So any new material that's come out since then is not accounted for.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll change these numbers too much.
All right. I got mine. Whoever reads first, don't say if they are correct.
I won't.
Just
for spells only, right?
You get a point for everyone you got right, though, too. So there's 6 possible points that you could get.
Yep. But if you fuck one of them up...
That's 2 points I subtracted, right? Because you put it somewhere else.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm going to post it in my Discord. Hold on. Podcast chat. Paste. Done. All right. Oh, wait. I fucked up. I forgot one.
It's okay. Oh, it's okay. Jay, you get to go first because this is sort of you started this. Let's finish it.
Okay. I'm actually just tossing them into. Discord chat, and I'm about to hit. Waples, you got yours in there?
Yeah, it's in the podcast chat.
Oh, I don't know where podcast chat's at.
It's one of the channels. Just click on podcast chat and paste them in there.
Which one's podcast chat?
The one that says the words podcast chat on it.
I don't see that. Podcast chat. There it is. I found it. It's up near the top. Up near the top.
Oh, okay. I got it.
You kids, you old men yelling at clouds, learn technology.
Okay. That's what I got.
Okay.
We have differences right out of the gate.
Yeah. All right. So let's add up the points here. So
what's the real answer?
Yeah. Read the real answers. Whoever missed the first one is.
Well, you type in the real answers.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so
and then we'll
number
we'll,
one.
You will read them off. Well, hold on.
Number one. Okay, go. Yeah.
All right. So, Chris, go ahead and read yours, then I'm gonna read mine. That way, everybody who's listening will hear.
All right. Right. So mine was wisdom, dexterity, constitution, strength, intelligence, charisma. And now that I think about it, I probably should have put strength above charisma and below intelligence.
Well, I went with dexterity, wisdom, constitution, charisma, intelligence, and strength. As the strength is the lowest.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad that strength this is my. This is. I was excited for this one.
Oh, this was fun. I like
60
it.
At 62 spells. Number one is dexterity.
Yeah. Aww. All right, I'm in the lead.
At 51 spells. Number two is wisdom.
Still going strong.
At 45 spells. At number three, constitution.
Okay, we both got that one.
Yep. Now it significantly drops off from here. So it was like 62, 51, 45 at 17. Number four is strength.
Okay. Whitepool's got that one.
Yep. At 14 spells, number five is charisma.
Neither of us got that one.
Yep. And finally, number six, at only a meager six spells, is intelligence.
All right. Oddly enough, yeah, that definitely changed further down the road because intelligence started getting more saving throws.
Yeah,
I think Pasha's, I was thrown off by all the spell like abilities and shit, like all the charming effects and whatnot. The monsters
Dex, wisdom, and con are like huge for spell saves, like saving throws. And then everything else from there is, you know, strength and charisma are pretty closely tied, and intelligence is the bare minimum.
Yep. But you know what we learned from this? That I'm better than Chris. I win.
Oh no, you're better at spells than me. Whatever will I do?
Don't worry. We'll have another game next time I come, and it'll be.
I love it.
It'll be different.
Gonna be arm wrestling?
No. God no.
Height competition.
Nope, not gonna win that one either.
Nope.
How many eggs we can actually? How many eggs we can eat in a single sitting? How many hard-boiled eggs we can eat?
I don't know.
What's that movie called?
I love eggs.
There's a movie.
That'd actually be a good competition, I think.
You mean Jackass?
No. It's the dude. He's in prison. God, what is that movie called?
I don't know.
I can't think of it right now.
There's a dude in prison, though.
Yeah, he eats a shitload of eggs. That's his thing.
Oh, really?
Cool Hand Luke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that one.
Cool Hand Luke. They make him eat like a crap load of hard-boiled eggs. But okay, there you go. There's the game, guys. That was make a saving throw, ?
Awesome.
I won.
Sure. Sure
you
did.
We're all winners here.
No. Never.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Yeah, of course.
So one last thing before we go. Mm-hmm. I have access to a lot of the advanced 5e stuff. I picked up the PDFs and I follow their Patreon. And once a month, they release something called the, what do they call it? Gate Pass Gazette. And it's basically like a PDF Dragon magazine where they have cool stuff that you can throw into your games and things. And in the most recent edition, they had something called Underland Ranchers, the Cuberos. And the idea is that food is kind of scarce, you know, in the Underdark. So you have to find different ways of raising food. Now, everybody kind of knows that the drow, they raise the Roth, which are kind of like lizard creatures. And then they have mushrooms. But apparently there's a group called the Cuberos who raise gelatinous cubes.
Nice.
For food purposes. And okay. It's kind of a cool thing. You can eat part of the gelatinous cubes. They create materials as well. They use them for breaking down other materials to get food sources out of them. But in the PDF, it's actually got a couple of backgrounds that you can choose from, as well as cube herder equipment, such as the cube herder poncho and the cube saddle, which are exactly what they sound like.
Awesome.
Yep. And the backgrounds are the Cubero, and then there's the actual Cube Herder background, which one of the abilities of the Cube Herder background is Jumping Jelly Rider. You are able to ride oozes of sufficient size without being immediately engulfed and dissolved, though they may still use their engulf attack against you. So wow. you can ride on a gelatinous cube. It's probably still going to eat you, but here's your means to do it, folks.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so now I need to find a way to charm a gelatinous cube because I want to ride one to battle, damn it.
Oh, yeah. And it's kind of invisible, too, unless it's moving. Mm-hmm.
My wife got me the giant gelatinous cube diorama. I got to finish cleaning my room so I can put it up someplace, but it's really nice. Like, you have, like, you have a human corpse in there that's decaying. You have a gazer that's stuck in it, like, halfway. And he's decaying down a little bit. So I've always wanted to, like, describe a gelatinous cube coming towards the party as, like, this, like, skeletal gazer just kind of, like, coming down the hallway at somebody yeah. with nothing else in it. And they're like, oh, shit! And, like, they're shooting stuff at it. And it's, like, stopping right in front of it because of hitting the cube. But, like, the arrows are hanging right. there. It's, like, they've got a force field.
It's a magic force field, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but then it's just a gelatinous cube.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I know you've seen the miniature for the gelatinous cube, Chris. The basic WotC miniature, you can actually take the cube apart.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Put smaller miniatures inside
it. And it just looks like a little box, like a little case, little plastic case.
Yeah.
Well, they're actually coming out with the official D&D Honor Among Thieves miniatures.
Yep.
And there's five in the little pack. Well, they try to keep one as a mysterious monster. Well, it's just an intellect devourer. But it has
they showed that one the other day, actually.
Yeah. They have like the mimic, the really cool mimic from the trailer that's in there. The displacer beast is in there. The white owlbear and the gelatinous cube is also in there with the heroes that jumped into it, that stuck into it. So.
Oh, that's cool. So you get a miniature with Chris Pine in it. Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Chris Pine dying to the gelatinous cube.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
That's an hour.
All right, guys.
Goodbye.
Thank you for joining us, guest Grumpy Dungeon Lord Jay. And
thank you for having me, of course. I had to
think about that one for a minute. I'm used to Dungeon Master, not Dungeon Lord.
Yeah.
That's me.
What's a higher title, though, Lord or Master?
Lord.
Yeah, it's probably Lord.
Then I'm the Dungeon King.
All right. Hi, guys.
Bye, Greg.